On a related note, Joe and I wanted to talk about our experience as partners of 21 years. I'd like to just start with a brief description of my own background. I have social work and accounting qualifications. I've worked in Indigenous arts, education, health and community service organisations, both government and non-government, over the past 30 years, and on a full-time, part-time and casual basis. We were tempted to dig out our submission to the Commission, which we presented when we lived in Alice Springs. We recall Chris Sidoti and the panel expressing serious concern at the discrimination we experienced. The unfortunate reality is that we could pretty much reread that submission from over 10 years ago. We could also read the one to Senator Sid Spindler prior to the bid by the Democrats to introduce anti-discrimination legislation at the federal level. We could read out our words to the South Australian Upper House Social Development Committee inquiry, as you've heard, one of many inquiries. We're not surprised by the brain drain from South Australia as we watch gay men and lesbians leaving the state. We have authority over each other's bank accounts, wills, powers of attorney, guardianship orders, nominated superannuation beneficiary arrangements, written instructions about death and burial, all attempts to prove interdependency. All this, and yet we're still not assured of our own safety as a couple. We lived in New South Wales before it was legal for a man to be gay. We were at Mardi Gras in 1978. We both lived in the Northern Territory, saw the anti-discrimination legislation in there, but left prior to the same-sex relationship recognition legislation taking place. We've been in South Australia for 10 years. Ironically, this was the place that was open to a doctoral thesis on GLBTI ageing. Maybe if we plan to move on to a more conservative location, South Australian legislation will pass and we'll have some small degree of greater financial security, at least at the state level. At the Commonwealth level, we're also aware of and affected by all the inequities which you've been made aware of: taxation, income splitting, superannuation, spouse rebates, PBS, Medicare thresholds. I'd actually like to talk a little more. I'd like to talk about how one of these affects us, superannuation. We have only ever had employer superannuation contributions made for on our behalf since it became compulsory. Having earned higher and lower incomes, fluctuating from year to year, neither of us has had consistently growing super accounts. This is common for many women. Should we now choose to invest in the hope of gaining some sort of retirement wealth, we can't be sure our super would be available to each other should one of us die. If it is available, it would only be following some legal action by the other. This example could be one of us last year, this year, next year. I could have chosen any income level. At higher levels, obviously, the discrimination is greater. But I'd like to just run you through very briefly what is a form of financial discrimination. Should we decide that we were able to afford to live on $7,000 less each year, we could look at whether to put that into super or whether to put it into something else like a bank account or funds management or whatever. If we chose the super option, say for example we're looking at one of us having a salary of $40,000 and you made a salary sacrifice of $10,000, gross income's then only $30,000, your tax would only be $4,900 per annum, and you'd have a net of $25,100. If we chose the non-super option on the same salary, you're already paying a tax of $8,000, so you've only got $32,000 to start with. You then invested $7,000, so you'd come back to the same net amount of $25,000. So I'm really comparing having $10,000 going into a super fund and $7,000 that you could invest elsewhere. Now, I'll assume an interest rate of 10% for both, which is very unlikely. The super is likely to actually be higher than that, and non-super option is likely to be lower, possibly half as much. At the end of 9 years, the super option, you would have $180,000. This is putting in the $10,000 each year plus compounding with the interest that they would add to it. After the same period of time, after 9 years, putting in the $7,000, you would only have $104,000. So there's a difference there, $75,000. Plus you'd be taxed on the interest in the non-super option every year. Alternatively, we could choose post-tax contributions and we would then get an additional 1% of salary put in by your employer, which would be equivalent of about $400 on the $40,000 salary, and an additional $900 per annum from the federal government. So you can see whichever way you would choose to go, you would be better if you could trust that you would actually have, your partner could have access to the super. At this stage, we can't be sure that that would be the case should one of us pass away. If we both were able to retire, obviously that wouldn't matter because we'd have access to it and we'd still have the right to decide what we wanted to do with our money. But it means that we could be jointly contributing funds to something which that one person then misses out on should the other one die.
Yep.
So just in conclusion, thanks very much for the time and your interest in prevention of discrimination and the opportunity we've had to come and speak with you.
Well, thank you both very much. You just mentioned a super fund.
Yes.
Is that a private fund or a government fund?
No, whatever. It wouldn't matter if you're working in non-government, private industry or government. The additional 1% that's a contribution is applicable by government, but it's also under some other award, so you could be in another industry.
I thought it might actually give you greater security, or at least there could be greater security available under some schemes than others. That was all.
That is true. Actually, I also was going to give you a comment from... I approached my super fund and asked them whether they would be prepared to list Joe as a beneficiary. They said, no, we don't list beneficiaries, but, she could take a case as putative spouse, should that need arise. So it's not, they're not even prepared to acknowledge her in their own documentation, even though the trustees could happily ignore that. They're not even prepared to actually show that as something, as my wish. So, there does vary from super fund to super fund.
This is a situation where there's no choice of super fund. You don't have a choice to move from that super fund, and where it is supposed to be a more progressive situation.
Mm. But it's still the case that even in another super fund, I'm in another super fund from my other from previous employment, where Joe is listed as a beneficiary, there's still no guarantee that they will honour that. So either way, you still don't know for sure.
Mm. I'm in three. Two will list Margie as a beneficiary and one won't. Mm. And I can't roll over, despite the new regulations. Mm. I'm stuck in all three. Mm.
Joe mentioned the Aged Care Act 1977 as... I inferred from what she says, is actually taking things backwards.
97. Definitely taking things backwards.
There are principles under that Act, I think, aren't there?
There are regulations, yeah.
Which set out a variety of principles.
Mm-hmm.
And your complaint is that they simply make no allowance at all for same-sex couples?
None. The one mention that was there of sexual orientation was removed.
Removed.
Yes.
And do they make provision for enabling married people to continue to live in circumstances that are appropriate to their relationship?
No, they don't. They infer it, but they leave it up to the individual provider to decide. And only a few days ago I had a student at the university approach me and tell me a story about a heterosexual married couple in a nursing home who were not allowed by the staff to be in the same room if they thought that they were engaging in intimacy. This is a married opposite-sex couple.
Right.
Mm. Yeah, and the facility has the right to do what it likes.
There is a code, isn't there, that's been established by the aged care industry, code of values?
Yes, there's a code of practice, that's right. And when the code of practice was brought in and they formed the National Aged Care Alliance... they actually discussed, to my surprise, the matter of how they would deal with discrimination on the basis of sexuality or gender identity, and they had a lot of trouble deciding what on earth they would do and how they would deal with this issue. In the end, they decided the easiest way to deal with it, which reflects something that Matthew referred to, was to just let each individual provider decide whether they did or didn't want to discriminate. Now, at the time, Karen Phelps was still the president of the AMA, and she issued a press release saying this was utterly reprehensible and that the AMA would not support that. It just fell on deaf ears. That's still the Alliance's official position, and that would probably explain why the Carers Association chose to just remain silent, because providers are choosing to remain silent rather than to be openly supportive of the removal of discrimination. Other providers are just choosing to discriminate and enjoying it.
And the code of values at the end of the day therefore made no reference to it at all?
No reference whatsoever.
Yes.
No, it was completely left out. Yeah. Mm.
You referred quite frequently in your submission to this expression, financial elder abuse. What's your definition of that?
Well, I guess it would comply pretty much with the definition that's used by most of the aged care advocacy services around Australia, some of which, including the one here in Adelaide, have a financial abuse unit.
Yes.
And work with the, yep, with the legal services.
Its effect is to pick up any form of financial discrimination.
Any form at all of financial abuse or discrimination, yes. Very, very broad. Basically, we'll take a referral from anyone if it relates to potentially being discriminated against or financial hardship or threats of removal of financial entitlements or whatever, then they'll pick it up.
Control of people's money.
Control of people's money, all that sort of stuff. Yeah, it's a very, very broad definition that the advocacy services use. Yeah,
control of people's money is what effectively under the control of the aged care organisation or facility? Is that the problem? How is that?
Legally, no. Legally, the control would be if someone... if someone's in an advanced stage of dementia, the legal control of their finances may rest with a relative to whom they've given power of attorney. Or their accountant, or their legal representative, or
but that's something over which they've got choice.
That's something over which they've got choice. But there, in my experience working in the industry, there have been circumstances where, when there's nobody else, the facility, in a de facto fashion, the facility decides that it will operate that person's bank account and does. But that's not legally recognised, and nothing's signed to allow that to happen.
In some of the information that you've referred us to, I think there is a plea for education to service providers,
yes,
which is something I imagine you'd be very supportive of.
Yes, yeah, very much. And while I was conducting my fieldwork in the United States, I met people from a number of agencies, including one in Seattle called Rainbow Train, who have a fantastic website. They train trainers from across the United States and now from internationally, so I'm actually hoping to go over there and do their training. They train trainers. They also run speakers bureaus. They train people who are themselves GLBTI and over 60, as well as people who've had contact with the industry, to the point where they then go into facilities, everywhere there's an aged care service provider, and basically train them in cultural competency around gender and sexual identity issues. There are a number of different models across the United States and Canada. The Rainbow Train's just the one that sort of sprang to mind, but there are other organisations doing similar work. There's no organisation in Australia doing that work at all. There have been attempts by some groups, particularly in Victoria, to get state government funding to do that work, and they've failed. So once they didn't get the funding, they just backed off completely, including, as like 10 years ago, an organisation in Victoria had a go and failed. Yeah.
But what we're trying to do, as you know, is to identify specific acts which are discriminatory in their effect.
Yeah.
And we are hearing from a number of submissions that aged care is really one area that's perhaps not adequately researched and touched on.
Yeah.
You've referred to the Aged Care Act 1997, but when just has a look at that act, it's pretty difficult to find the provision that you say that provision is discriminatory. What you're saying is it's discriminatory in its effect because it simply doesn't draw distinctions.
Yes, discriminatory in two ways. It's discriminatory by neglect.
Yes.
So it's discriminatory by the fact that it completely denies the very existence of gay and lesbian consumers of aged care services. They just simply don't exist. So that then means they are completely cut off from any option of using any legislation to assert their their rights. The same thing's translated into the standards that the Aged Care Standards and Accreditation Agency uses when it enters a facility or measures the facility against the Commonwealth standards. Again, it's just discrimination by virtue of neglect and non-mention. So therefore, it's not an issue that the agency looks for or measures the sort of quality of the facility against. But there's also active discrimination taking place at the more, I suppose, informal level within facilities.
But that's not by reason of the Act. That's by reason of the way in which the management chooses
yes,
to run it, isn't it?
But the Act feeds the invisibility.
Yes.
The invisibility feeds the fear. The old person doesn't come out. The provider thinks, oh, good, I won't get into trouble if I tell them, you make a complaint about me, I'll out you. Or the provider writes in the file, don't bathe the lesbian. That is a real example. Okay, now the provider gets the message from somewhere, it's fine to do that. You won't cop anything if you do that. You're safe. And so the message is reinforced by the neglect in the legislation, and the message is reinforced by the providers on the ground who think they're safe to discriminate.
So to deal with that, you need some anti-discrimination legislation, which is putting sexual orientation up as a...
You need that,
as an issue.
And that's your broader umbrella. Then under that, just in relation to aged care, you need whatever an audit of the legislation impacting on older GLBTI people, basically uncovers, because I couldn't begin to list the legislation that impacts on gain lesbian aged care.
I was going to ask you.
I couldn't begin. I mean, we'd have the Aged Care Act at the top. We'd have all the regulations.
Just looked at the Aged Care Act. It just doesn't say anything. So that's the criticism
of that Act. Okay. Then what you'd have to do is start looking at the other acts that feed, say, at the state level, that feed home care and all of the other sort of providers and the local government level as well.
Are we going to find mainly that the discrimination is arising because of silence in those acts?
Yes, I think you'd find that it's mainly the silence or the interpretation of words like spouse, family.
Oh, yes. Well, those are
specific. So in that sense, that's right. Therefore, the legislation would require reform. Yeah.
Yes.
So it's predominantly a lack of mention that is feeding this cycle of invisibility and fear, and providers think it's therefore okay to discriminate, which it actually is legally okay to discriminate, because so many of them are church-based providers, and there is nothing to stop them evicting someone tomorrow if they decided they didn't want a gay man in their nursing home. They know they can do it, and so do the residents, and everybody is afraid. Yeah. You're living at home, there are things around your house that indicate that you're gay, lesbian or transgender or whatever. You're suddenly requiring home care services or the district nurse to come to your house. Where is your guarantee that the person who arrives on your doorstep is not homophobic? Where is your guarantee that you will not be placed in any danger, physical, financial, whatever, just or interpersonal, as a result of that person's attitudes? You're not even at the moment in a position to say to that organisation, and most people wouldn't do it, I'm gay and I want a non-homophobic service provider on my doorstep, and if you can't provide one, don't send one. That is an issue. It's also an issue if people's partners have passed away and they want to put photos of their partners up in the nursing home room. They get asked continuously, who's that? Is that your sister? Mm. Yes, it is.
Mm. You very frankly said you can't start to list the acts. I had a look at some of the websites that you gave us, and they weren't listing the acts either. Do you know if there's any research that has really
There's no research that's listed the acts. I mean, I could have a go if you want me to. I could start the process.
But I just wonder.
But it's large. It's a multi-layered, tangled web. Aged care is unbelievable, because you can be living in a home and receiving home care, and your services could come directly from the Commonwealth, from the Commonwealth and the state jointly, only from local government, from an NGO or from your neighbour. And that's just literally getting a bit of home help.
Mm.
It's a hell of a mess. The Home and Community Care Program that was introduced in 1985 was intended to help sort this out. It was a joint Commonwealth-State program. Bloody disaster. I went to the Commonwealth-State meetings. I was actually working for the New South Wales government at the time. No one could agree on anything. It was all just a big mess. So they brought in the legislation. Then the Commonwealth decided, oh, that was a mistake. Let's set up our own separate system.
Which legislation? I mean, what we're trying to do is identify acts.
That's the Home and Community Care Act. Yeah. So that went along for a while, and everyone decided, oh, well, okay, well, we'll still keep that operating because we don't want to have a fight with the states. But really, it's such a mess on the ground. What will we do? Oh, let's go away and form another Commonwealth program. Now, this is where the community aged care packages, the extended aged care in the home packages, this is where these are Commonwealth only programs under Commonwealth legislation. And the CACPs were in before 97. Each probably started about 3 years ago. Most of them are just brought in by regulation or whatever. It doesn't require legislative change. That's Commonwealth only. That's the Commonwealth effectively saying, well, we had a go, we've set up the HAC program, we'll keep it going, but really, it's a bit of a disaster. So, okay, we'll bring in these Commonwealth packages and chuck them over the top. Now, they're sprinkled across Australia, and half the clients, I mean, no one knows or frankly cares. Am I getting it from the Commonwealth? Am I getting it from the Commonwealth and the state? Is it coming from local government? Is it the church? Is it, you know, and if so, where do they get their funding? But that, I mean, that's a demonstration that there's sort of multiple layers of legislation and then regulations, guidelines, standards, all feeding into this maze. Yeah, and they would all have to be addressed. In terms of the fact that they in no way acknowledge or take into account the existence at all of GLBTI older people. Yeah. But I could certainly have a go at listing them.
Well, I mean, identification of some which we can actually put our finger on would be very helpful.
Right, yeah.
Well, thank you both very much.
Thank you.
It's very interesting to have someone that's done some research in that area because, as I said, we're beginning to get the message from some of the submissions that there is
terrific,
a real
it's coming through.
Untapped problem in the aged care level.
Yeah, and it's terrific that the Commission's been so interested in it. It's really, really good. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. Thank you both very much.
Thanks.